Śuka uvaca. Nandastatra yadun praptam.
Nandastatra yadun praptam.
Yatva Krishna purogamam.
Tatra gama trito gopair.
Anasahar jidrikshaya. Nandastatra yadun praptam. Yatva Krishna purogamam. Gamadrito gopar, Astahar didrikshaya, and Astatra yadun praptan, Yatva Krishna purogaman, Dragamadrito gopar. Shishuku vacha. Shukadeva Goswami said. Nanda.
Nanda.
Nanda Maharaj.
Tatra.
There. Yadun.
Yadun.
The Yadus.
The Yadus.
Praptan.
Praptan.
Arrived.
Arrived.
Yatva.
Yatva.
Finding out.
Finding out.
Krishna.
Krishna.
Lord Krishna.
Lord Krishna.
Puragaman.
Puragaman.
Keeping in front.
Keeping in front.
Tatra.
Tatra.
There.
There.
Agamat.
Agamat.
He went.
He went.
Britaha.
Britaha.
Accompanied.
Accompanied.
Ogopai.
By the cowherds. Anna. Anna.
On their wagons.
On their wagons.
Star.
Star.
Placed.
Placed.
Ahai.
Ahai.
Whose possessions?
Whose possessions?
Didrikshaya.
Didrikshaya.
Wanting to see.
Wanting to see.
Translation and purports by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. Shukadev Goswami said, when Nanda Maharaj learned that the Yadus had arrived, led by Krishna, he immediately went to see them. The cowherds accompanied him, their various possessions loaded on their wagons. Translation responsibly. Shukadev Goswami said, when Nanda Maharaj learned that the Yadus had arrived, led by Krishna.
Led by Krishna.
He immediately went to see them.
He immediately went to see them.
The cowherds accompanied him.
The cowherds accompanied him.
Their various possessions loaded on their wagons.
Their various possessions loaded on their wagons.
Omagyan timarandasya gyanantina shalakaya chakshun militam yena tasai shri gurave namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swa Padantikam Pancha Kalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhuhi Hevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare.
So as we said previously, earlier in the week, that this chapter of the Bhagavatam is one of the most intimate of the Bhagavatam's chapters, because it discusses the meeting between the Brijbasis and Krishna at Kurukshetra after a very long absence or period of separation. So it discusses the the relationship or the rasa between Krishna and the Brijbasis. This has also been described earlier in the Bhagavatam. But this chapter is especially intense because it describes the intense separation that was felt and the intense union that was experienced between Krishna and the Brijbasis after meeting after a long time. Now, there are many Vedic literatures. We hear in the beginning of the Bhagavatam that Srila Vyasadeva saw that Kali Yuga was coming. So because he understood that Kali Yuga was about to commence, he put all of the Vedas into writing. So he employed Ganapati, Ganesh, to be the scribe for him. And Vyasadeva spoke in Bhadarik Ashram in the Himalayas. He spoke for a long, long time, speaking all of the Vedas. And Ganapati, Ganesh, he was writing. He was the one who wrote, he was the scribe who wrote all of the Vedic literatures. And because he has four arms, then whenever he became tired, writing with his two arms after some time, then he'd change arms like that, keep writing. And then when he was tired again, then he would change back like that. So continue. So he just wrote continuously, on and on and on. And Vyasadeva just spoke. So they divided the original Veda, the one Veda, into four: Rig, Yajur, Atava, and Sama Veda. Then they wrote the collieries of the Vedas, the Mahabharat and the Ramayana. And they wrote the 108 Upanishads. And they wrote the Itihasas, and then they wrote the Puranas. 18 Puranas, 18 major Puranas, and 18 minor Puranas. Now, after writing the Puranas are divided 6 in the mode of ignorance, the principal one, 6 in the mode of passion, and 6 in the mode of goodness. But after writing all of that, he did not feel satisfied, and when he had darshan of his Guru Maharaj, Narad Muni, Narada said, looking at his face, because it is said the face is the index of the mind. You can tell what sort of a mood someone's in just by looking at their face. Are they happy? Are they not happy? Like that. So he was looking depressed. So therefore, Narada said, what is the cause of your anxiety or your unhappiness, your lack of satisfaction? So he said, could it be that you have not written one scripture which emphasizes pure devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna? It's not that Krishna's pastimes not being described in other Puranas already. In the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, there is a lot of pastimes about Krishna already. Krishna's pastimes had been discussed to a certain extent in other places. So it was not that they hadn't been described as yet, but they had not been described in the light of pure devotional service. That is the difference between the Bhagavatam. And therefore, the Bhagavatam says in the 12th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, Puranam, Amalam, Yad Vaishnavanam, Priyam. Right? It is especially dear to the Vaishnavas because it is Amala Purana, because it is a pure, spotless Purana. It doesn't have the contamination of three modes of material nature within it. It discusses the three modes of material nature. It discusses the effects. There's many pastimes where there are personalities who are under the three modes of material nature within the Bhagavatam. But the difference of the Bhagavatam is that it always concludes with Amala Bhakti, or Uttama Bhakti, or Kevala Bhakti, or Shuddha Bhakti, pure devotional service. So that is why it is considered to be the topmost Vedic literature. And it was favoured by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu above and beyond any other literatures. And you'll see in Mahaprabhu's followers, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, in their writings, in the Sandarbhas, and in all their commentaries and so forth, you'll see that they quote as the final Vedic evidence or the final authority, the topmost authority, the Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore it is considered to be the supreme of all scriptures. Right? So how many chapters are there in the Bhagavatam? How many cantos are there in the Bhagavatam? 12. There's 12 cantos. And then how many chapters? 330 something. I can't remember. 332, 334, something like that. I can't remember the exact. I don't like that. 330 chapters, right? So, of all the Bhagavatam, if you look at the Bhagavatam, right, which canto is the largest? 10th canto, right? And what is the 10th canto about? It is about the summum bonum. It is the final. The Bhagavatam has 10 subject matters. And the final subject matter of the Bhagavatam is the ashraya. Right? Ashraya means the shelter. Right? The final place of shelter. That final place of shelter is the summum bonum of all things. What is the final shelter of everything? Just like if you go back in this universe and you go back and you say, so where did I come from? Right? So first of all you say, well, I came from my parents. So where did they come from? Right? Your grandparents. And where did they come from? Your great-grand. And then you go back and you keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going. Which gotra do you come from? Where do you come from? Go right back to the sages, the original Prajapatis, where you came from. And where did they all come from? Lord Brahma. Where did he come from? From the navel of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. Where did Garbhodakshaya Vishnu come from? Mahavishnu. Where did Mahavishnu come from? Lord Narayan. Where did Lord Narayan come from? Lord Balaram. And where did Balaram come from? Krishna. Okay. So then, that's the summum bonum. That's the ashraya. That is the ultimate shelter of everything. Krishna is Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. Right? There's no other personality beyond Krishna. Krishna is the final abode or final resting place of everything. So the Bhagavatam establishes this. So in the 10th canto, there are 90 chapters. So there's 330 or so chapters in the Bhagavatam. 90 of those chapters are just about Krishna, right? The final personality, right? The ultimate personality. So therefore, the Bhagavatam, 90, if you divide 330 by 90, then what do you get? It's about one quarter, is it?
Yeah.
A bit over a third. Yeah, so then you take the 11th canto, right, which is 20 chapters where Krishna is speaking of Uddhava Gita. And if you go to the beginning of the 3rd canto, right, the first 4 chapters are just about Krishna, like that. And then, if you look into the 1st canto, chapter 7, right, Krishna first appears with Ashwatthama, like that. And then Krishna is from chapters 7 in the first canto until around about chapter 16 until Pariksit Maharaj appears. Krishna is with the Pandavas until he goes back to Dwarka. So you add all those chapters together. Most of the Bhagavatam is directly about Krishna. So the Bhagavatam is about Krishna. That is the point of the Bhagavatam. Therefore it is said, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. Right? This verse in the first canto governs the rest of the Bhagavatam. It establishes what is the subject matter of the Bhagavatam. The subject matter of the Bhagavatam is? It is Krishna. Right? Krishna is the subject of the Bhagavatam. And if there's anything else which is discussed in the first 9 cantos of the Bhagavatam, or in the 11th or 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, all of those things are simply leading us to understanding Krishna. Everything is connected to Krishna. All the different avatars which appear in all the different cantos, these are simply Krishna's incarnations. That is the explanation then is that they are coming from Krishna. Right? So therefore the Bhagavatam is about Krishna. Right? So here in the 10th canto, it is described in the beginning of the 10th canto, Krishna's relationship with the residents of Vrindavan. Now this is the essence of the Bhagavatam, Krishna's relationship with the residents of Vrindavan. We see that it is said the Bhagavatam is said to be like a deity. The first 2 cantos are the deity's lotus feet, part of Padma. Right? And then it said the 3rd canto is some part of the legs. fourth canto, fifth canto, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth. Ninth is the neck, by that gradually rising through the body of the deity. And then the tenth canto is said to be the smiling face of Krishna. The 11th canto is his forehead, and the 12th canto is his crown, like that. So the face is the most beautiful part of the body. When you look at someone, you look at their face, right? You don't look at their elbow. What a beautiful elbow you have, like that, right? When you look at someone, then you look at their face, right? The face is the most beautiful part of the body. So the most beautiful part of the face is the smile. When someone smiles, they become very beautiful. Even someone who's very ugly, when they smile, they become beautiful. It's a fact. Yes, someone might be quite ugly, but when they smile, they become very beautiful. Oh, that's a fact. So the smile is the most beautiful part of the face. So in the 10th canto, the smile of Krishna is chapters 29 to 34. Sorry, 233, like that. Those five chapters are considered to be Krishna's smile, because this is when Krishna is dancing with the gopis. So this is his most pleasurable pastime. These are the pastimes which give him the most pleasure. So, in the beginning of the 10th canto, we see the most intimate pastimes of God. And then, after those intimate pastimes of God are explained and described in summary in the beginning of the 10th canto, then Krishna leaves Vrindavan. And then Krishna goes to Mathura, and then he goes to Dwarka. How long did Krishna stay on earth for? 125 years. How long was he living in Vrindavan?
10
or 15, which one?
15.
No. How long was he in Vrindavan? 10 years, like that, nearly 11 years. Right. So Krishna stayed in Vrindavan, and then he went to Mathura. How long did he live in Mathura? 18 years. You remember in the Bhagavatam you read that Mathura was attacked 17 times by Jarasandha, right? So for 17 years, Krishna stayed in Mathura, and every year Jarasandha came back. Right? And then he was defeated by Krishna and Balaram. They destroyed his entire army. Each time he brought one Akshahini division, over 1 million soldiers. Right? And then Krishna and Balaram single-handedly destroyed every person in his army. And they spared his life. And he went back and his friends told him it was just bad luck. You were just having a bad day. The stars were against you. Inauspicious constellations, not a good time to go to battle. So he went back next year. He did this 17 times. Right, you have to be pretty silly, right, to keep going back. If someone is defeating you 15 times, 16 times, then you come back 17 times. And the 18th time, Krishna thought, okay, that's enough. Let's go to Dwarka. So he created Dwarka within the ocean. Now, Dwarka is said to be 96 square miles in diameter, and it was floating on the ocean. So it was off the coast where we say Dwarka is now, the city of Dwarka. It was off the coast, they're floating on the ocean. So it was surrounded by water, so no one could attack Krishna and his relatives, the Yadu dynasty. It was a safe abode where he could protect his family. So he lived there for the remainder of that time, 96 years or so, he lived in Dwarka, like that. So Dwarka was said to be 96 square miles, but within that 96 square mile location, Krishna had, just himself, without his family members, Krishna had 16,108 palaces. And each palace was said to be 2 miles long and 2 miles deep, 4 square miles. Each palace, right? That's a big palace. That's like Krishna's house, his palace, would go from here to South Melbourne Market. Or maybe a little bit further. Yeah, that's a big house. And he had 16,108 of those, right? So if you line them up all next to each other, right, that would be 32,000 miles of palaces, right? And that 32,000 miles of palaces all fitted within 96 square miles. This is called Achincha Shakti. So someone could say, well, why does Krishna do stuff like that? Why does Krishna do these things? Because he wants to show you, I am God. I am supreme. Right? You get puffed up just because you had one flat. Right? One wife, two kids, and a dog called Lolita. Okay. So, you think you're very powerful just because you have, you know, the potency to maintain one little chetra. Krishna shows you that you think you are powerful, but I will show you what is real power. I have 16,108 palaces, and in each of those palaces I have a wife, and I have 10 sons in each palace. Right? And for me, it is not even slightly difficult for me to maintain all of this. So Krishna is showing, this is God. Just like people say, why do you believe Krishna is God? And we say to them, well, just sit down for a few minutes and we'll tell you why Krishna is God. Because his power is unlimited. And every morning, Krishna had one assembly hall where he would meet with all of the Yadu dynasty every morning. It was called the Sudama Assembly Hall. So, every morning Krishna comes out of his palaces. 16,108 Krishnas come out of 16,108 palaces and get onto 16,108 chariots. And they all begin to drive towards the Sudama Assembly Hall. And as they travel towards the Sudama Assembly Hall, they all merge into each other. So then by the time he arrives in front of the Sudama Assembly Hall, all 16,108 forms merge into one form of Krishna. And then Krishna walks into the Sudama Assembly Hall and he stays there during the day with all of his relatives, and they discuss the affairs of Dwarka, of the state, of the kingdom. And then at the end of the day he walks out, right, gets on his chariot, and as the chariot drives off, then begins to manifest 16,108 forms. This is opulence. This is called Aishwarya. This is God. He shows you how powerful he is. He is not a conditioned personality. There's no condition on him. Unconditional. Right? Swarat means independent. Fully independent. You know, we think we're independent. You know, oh, I can do whatever I want. You know, I can enjoy whatever I want. You can't enjoy anything. You have no ability. You can only enjoy what you can enjoy if Krishna allows you to enjoy it. Just like, you know, you say, I'm independent. I can lift my arm up. Right? That's my independence. Right? But if Krishna says no, then that's it. The arm cannot lift. So we think we have independence, but actually it is all insignificant. But Krishna, he is Swarat, which means fully independent. Nothing is beyond his capability. Just like they wrote some books in the 1970s, very famous books. One of the books was that God is dead. He passed away. Right? That's why the world is not going so well anymore. Because he passed away, he's gone. You know, he was a nice person. And he did everything he could. But now he's gone, so good luck. And hope you all do well. So that's one philosophy. And then another book came out, and that book was describing that God, he's getting old now, and it's hard for him to manage everything because he has trouble getting up in the morning. And yeah, he's got a little bit of arthritis now, so. And it takes him 40,000 years to comb his beard in the morning. So he doesn't have the potency that he used to have. So he's very sorry. He'd like to be doing a better job, but give him a break. You know. And that's why the world's not going so good now. So this is all called bogus philosophy. It's called mental speculation. Don't speculate about God, right? God, by definition, is all-powerful. All-powerful means? All-powerful. Means he's unlimited, right? He's so powerful, you can't even imagine how powerful he is. Just like I got up this morning at Noon Underground, and I walked outside, and I do this every night, every morning, and I see the Milky Way when it's a clear night. There was no clouds this morning. You see the whole Milky Way. Prabhupada says in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, the Milky Way, you know what the Milky Way is? It's like a mist which goes through the sky. If you look up, like you see all the stars, but it's like a mist, a whitish mist which goes up through the sky. Prabhupada says in the second canto that is the lotus flower which is coming from the navel of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, from the bottom of the universe, which is going up to the top of the universe. Top of the universe is Brahma Loka, Satya Loka, the lotus planet of Lord Brahma at the top of the universe. That Milky Way is the lotus stem of the lotus flower. And within that lotus stem there are 14 planetary systems. Srila Prabhupada, today is Tamal Krishnamurti's disappearance day. Prabhupada once said to Tamal Krishnamurti in Los Angeles, 1968-1969, he said that there are unlimited universes coming from the pores of Mahavishnu. Unlimited universes coming from the pores. And in one of those universes, which is the one we're in, which happens to be the smallest one, because it's the last one that comes out of his pore. Our Lord Brahma only has four heads, Chaturmukha, right? But most of the Lord Brahmas in the other universes have 100 heads or 1,000 heads, even Prabhupada says some have 1 million heads. That we can't even estimate what that means, but yeah, our universe just, in this universe, so many universes are coming, there's one little universe. And in that universe, there are so many planets. Just like when you look up at night time in the sky, and there's so many planets. Right? That all comes from Krishna. Krishna says in the Gita, that is a spark of my splendor. Right? We think, if you think about it, we are so small and tiny, and that is so powerful. Who created that? Right? And that's just one universe. We don't understand that there's many, 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 many more like that. And for Krishna, Krishna is just sleeping, and as he's breathing in and out, these are just coming in and out of his pores. Right? When we go to sleep, what comes out of our pores is not in our control, and it's not particularly, it's not anything. But when Krishna, he sleeps and something comes out of his pores, it's a universe. Right? So there's all these universes, and in this one universe there's so many planets, you can't even count how many stars there are in the sky. And we're on one planet, and this tiny little planet called Earth. Right? And on this one little planet, there are so many countries. Right? And then there's one country called the United States of America. Prabhupada was saying this to Tamal Krishnamurti. And he said, on this one planet called the USA, there are so many cities. And you're in one city called Los Angeles. And in this one city called Los Angeles, there are so many streets. And you are in this one street called Watsika Avenue. I don't know if that was where the temple was at that stage, but that's where the temple is now. And then there are so many streets, right? And in this one street, right, there are so many houses, right? And in this one street with all the houses, there's one temple. And in this temple, there are so many devotees. But out of all the devotees, there's one temple commander. Tamal Krishnamurti was the temple commander at that time. He said, so out of all the devotees, right, there is one temple commander, and he thinks he's very important. So Tamal Krishnamurti said he felt like a little ant. Prabhupada just brought us all down in perspective. Right? So compared to Krishna, we don't have any potency. So the Bhagavatam establishes Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. The word Bhagavan means Bhagavan means one who has unlimited opulence. Bhagavan. Aishwaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashasaha shriyaha jnana vairagya yaschaiva shanam bhaga itinganam. Bhaga means opulence. Shanam bhaga means six opulences. Right? Aishwarya means? Yeah, it means wealth. Yeah? Opulence like that. You know, we think, my bank account has four figures. You know? I'm very influential now. I can go to the supermarket and buy whatever I want. I can put petrol in my car. No. Krishna, his opulence is beyond compare. Aishwaryasya, samagrasya. Viryasya, virya means strength. Right? Krishna is unlimitedly powerful. Yasha means famous. Right? Krishna is so famous, he spoke a conversation 5,000 years ago, and everyone is still reading it all over the world. Millions of people are reading that conversation. Right? Whatever we say, no one remembers the next day. Usually most people forget it in 2 minutes. Right? But Krishna, when he says something so famous, it just continues like that. Shriya means beauty. You might be beautiful now, but just give it 60 years and see how you're looking. But Krishna is Navayovana. Navayovana means he is always youthful, always fresh, always beautiful, like that. Jnana means knowledge. You know, we get puffed up because we know three shlokas. Like that. You know, Krishna spoke the whole Bhagavad Gita. The Vedas come from his breathing. And jnana, vairagyas chaiva. Vairagya means renunciation. Right? We don't even know how to spell renunciation. We're so attached to everything. Where are my glasses? Where are my glasses? Right? You're sitting in my spot. So attached. We're so attached to everything. My car. Right, my, like that. Right, we don't even know what renunciation means. Krishna owns everything and he's not attached to anything. That's Krishna. That's how powerful he is. So the Bhagavatam is establishing that this is God. Right, it is not sentimental. God is not sentimental. Just like, you know, someone grows a lot of hair. In the West we call it an afro. Right, they grow a lot of hair. And then, you know, they bring out some jade necklace from their palm or from out of their kaftan, right? Or from under a statue, you know. Right? And everyone goes, oh, Bhagavan. This is not God. This is insignificant. We should not be sentimental about God. The problem with the Western world is karma. In the Vedas, there are three subjects. Karma, bhakti and jnana, right? Now the problem with the Western world is everyone is caught up in karma. Karma means sense gratification. That's the problem with the West. Sense gratification, right? That's why people can't take the Krishna consciousness, because just too attached to enjoying their senses. Give up intoxication, right? Are you insane? Right? Give up eating meat. You know? Give up illicit sex, right? Impossible. Like that. So this is the Western world. But India, which is the original home of the Vedic culture, their attachment is to, it is sense gratification also, but it is also very much to jnana. Very much attached to speculation. That is the problem. In India, everyone is very sentimental. Not everyone, but the majority. Very sentimental. Right? Think they know everything. Right? Try to give them the Bhagavad Gita. I know. No, I know. My grandmother had it on the shelf. I know. That is their position. Simply speculating. Think they know everything. Know nothing. I know. And they have all their different speculations about what God is. So sentimental. You know, this one who has the big haircut, he is God. You know, this one who, just like we went to India last year, to Parshana, one big ashram. Right? And the person who, I won't say the name, I can't remember the name, but the person who owns the ashram, everyone says he's Bhagavan, he's God, he's the Yuga avatar. Right? But then you go to the next village, right? And then they've got their own Yuga avatar. Every state of India has about 5,000 of them. Yuga avatar. Even one time I was in Anuruddha Prabhu's office about, I don't know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago or something. And we got one letter in the mail, and he opened the letter, and it said, Kalki incarnation has come. Yuga avatar. All of ISKCON, surrender. Sandy Rita Prabhu got the letter and put it in the shredder. Then opened up the electricity bill, because that was actually important. So this is the situation. Anyone can be God. And this is all sentimentalism. Don't be sentimental. Right? God is God. He is Bhagavan. And he has to be proven as such. And Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We can establish that on the authority of the Srimad Bhagavatam, on the Vedic authority. He is the Supreme Absolute Truth. So all of the pastimes that Krishna displays are to, in the Bhagavatam, are to establish this point that he is supreme. Now, do you accept? Prabhupada once said to all the GBC back in the 1970s, he said, do you accept that Krishna is God? Are you convinced? And no one put up their hand. It's a little bit different. You know, if I say to all of you, hands up if you are convinced that Krishna is God. Hands up. Any hands? I guess nearly everyone put up their hand. But if Prabhupada said it, right? If you were sitting before Prabhupada and Prabhupada looked you in the eye, he said, are you convinced that Krishna is God? Right? That's very different. Because that goes to the very core of your heart. Right? So, we have to become convinced that Krishna is God. It is not sentimental. The Bhagavatam is establishing he is supreme. Now, he meets here, Krishna meets Nanda Maharaj. So this chapter of the Bhagavatam is one of the most intimate chapters of the Bhagavatam because Krishna has been established for 9 cantos as the Supreme Absolute Truth. Now he should be accepted as such. Now that we're studying the 10th canto, we should be convinced that Krishna is God based on the explanation of the first 9 cantos. Now that we accept he is God and we understand he's unlimited, we've heard about all the Dwarka pastimes. This is nearly the end of the 10th canto. We've heard about all the Dwarka pastimes. Now Krishna is meeting again the residents of Vrindavan in Kurukshetra after a long separation. Because Krishna is re-emphasizing again in his pastimes that although I am the God of creation, although I am an all-powerful living entity, although I am the Supreme Personality, but still, out of all of my devotees, the Brijbasis capture my heart more than any other devotees. Here it is described in the commentaries of the Acharyas that when Yashoda and Nanda see Krishna again after many, many years, Mother Yashoda takes Krishna upon her lap and milk starts flowing from her breast. And she feels, although Krishna is now an adult, Krishna is like 100 years old or something by now, even though he looks young, he looks like he's 25, but he's 100 years old. She takes him on her lap and she wants to feed him just like he was her 8-year-old child. Right? She has so much love for Krishna. And Mother Devaki is there. And Devaki, who believes that she is actually Krishna's mother, but she doesn't understand that Krishna, when he appeared in Mathura, he also simultaneously appeared in Vrindavan, in Gokul. So Mother Yashoda and Nanda are the parents of Krishna, and Devaki and Vasudeva are the parents of Krishna, but Vasudeva and Devaki think they're the actual parents, and Nanda and Yashoda were just the foster parents for the first 10 years of Krishna's life. So Mother Yashoda, she is crying and she has Krishna on her lap, and Krishna is crying and he is embracing Mother Yashoda, and they're feeling so much affection for each other. And at this point in time, Devaki begins to speak to Yashoda because she becomes a little concerned. Just like when the mother, if she detects that the child has more affection for someone else other than her, she becomes very disturbed. So Mother Devaki begins to say, actually, your son, who you think is your son, actually you looked after him very nicely when you look, and she keeps saying, you looked after my child very nicely when he was young. And she keeps repeating this. When he went to Vrindavan from Mathura, where he appeared as my child, you looked after him very nicely. And my child, right, is feeling so much affection for you right now. So she keeps trying to emphasize this. And the acharyas find out that Krishna and Mother Yashoda can't even hear Devaki. Devaki is trying to convince Mother Yashoda and Krishna that actually you're mine. And this is just your foster parents. But because Krishna has so much love for the residents of Vrindavan, far more than the residents of Dwarka or the residents of Mathura or the residents of Vaikuntha, then in the presence of Mother Yashoda, Krishna and Yashoda, they can't even hear Devaki speaking. And Devaki just, she realizes the position actually. So this is why this chapter is considered to be one of the most intimate chapters of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. And we'll see after this, in a short period of time, Krishna meets with the gopis. And in that pastime, when Krishna meets the gopis, some of the most intimate exchanges take place. And Srimati Radharani actually speaks very intimate verses to Krishna and calls him to come back to Vrindavan. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would often recite these verses when he was on Ratha Yatra in Jagannath Puri. So these are very intimate things. So we could describe these things in detail, but we're running out of time. And I probably would keep speaking, but today is Tamakrish Maharaj's disappearance day, so we have to do some preparations. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed. I haven't heard that, but that is it there?
I can't
quite
say where I read it, but
I've also heard of the path the yogis take.
Yeah, well, Prabhupada says in the second canto, he said it is the lotus stem.
So the yogis, they chase out the root of the lotus stem?
Yeah, because the 14 planetary systems are within that. So they travel up if they're going up to Janaloka or Mahaloka or Tapaloka or something. So. It take it like that. I haven't heard that. It could be true. I haven't heard that. When the Ganga comes into the universe, she flows through the different planetary systems. She comes to Swaga, which means the heavenly planets, and then she comes down to Earth. She enters through Gangotri in the Himalayas. And then she goes into the ocean. And she's so powerful, it's actually said, Jivataka was explaining, Ganga Devi is so powerful, when she enters the ocean, she doesn't actually mix with the ocean. She actually enters the ocean, she travels around the entire earth through all seven oceans. So that's why you see when Jayapataka Swami comes to Australia, if he's in Perth or Melbourne, he goes to the ocean, he touches the water on his head. Because actually Ganga is travelling through every part of the, like that. And then she goes down, we can't see, but then she goes into Patala Loka, she goes into the lower planets, like that, from Earth. Okay, so does that answer the question? I haven't heard what you said, but it could be true. Any other questions?
These people get benefit from it. People are taking bath in these oceans. And do they get the benefit of taking bath in Ganga?
I'm not sure if it's the same. Right. If it's the same, I'm not sure. Jivataka Swami takes some drops. Ask him when he comes, because he knows these things.
Well, they're helpful.
Like you're saying that Krishna was in the first 28 then there were 96 square
miles.
Yeah, square miles. 28 and 25, so that's what, 97? 96, 97. He was in Vrindavan until nearly 11. I think it was 10 years, 8 months.
Yeah. The same. Well, one reason why Jayasana was very confident in fighting Krishna was he defeated 10,000 kings.
Oh yeah, Jarasandha was powerful. When Kamsa, because Jarasandha gave his daughters to Kamsa. So Jarasandha was powerful. He was travelling around the world defeating, subjugating all the kings. And it says in the Bhagavatam, subjugated thousands of kings like that. So he got to Mathura, and that's where Kamsa was. And then he had the elephant, Kuvalaya, appeared. and Kublai appeared, could fight with 10,000 other elephants simultaneously. Jarasandha caught or captured Kublai appeared with 10,000 other elephants. That's how he contained him. So he was so powerful. So he sent Kublai appeared into Mathura to conquer Kamsa. And Jarasandha was setting up camp outside of Mathura. And then Kamsa, when Kublai appeared, came into Mathura and he began to destroy the city. Kamsa came out and he grabbed Kublai appeared and picked him up and threw him back out to Jarasandha's camp. Then Kublai appeared and smash. And then Jarasandha thought, well, maybe I should make a pact. Yeah, make an alliance with him, because there's going to be too much bloodshed. You know, if I go in there, you know, between me and Kamsa, then we'll, you know, everything will be destroyed. So then he gave him his two daughters, and they made the pact. Right, any other question or comment?
When you mentioned that when you leave someone in Bhagavad Gita and they say, my grandmother has to be shot, or my father has to be shot, what is a good argument to make them take the Bhagavad Gita?
Yeah, no, people say, you know, it's very common when you preach to people from India, they say, I know. When Prabhupada first came to America, all the disciples, because they'd never met really anyone from India, so Tamal Krishna Maharaj and all the devotees, Japataka Swami, and all the devotees who had just joined Umapati Swami, Kirtananda, Brahmananda, and all the first devotees, they really hadn't experienced India before. So they thought, you know, Prabhupada just did that, because Prabhupada just go. So then they all started doing it. So everyone in ISKCON was going. Like that. But then when they went to India for the first time, they realized that there's 1 billion people who do that. Everyone like that. So in India, it's very common, because they're very affected by Gyan, because that's where Gyana comes from. And the Vedas come from India. So over the generations, all these souls who maybe have taken birth again and again within India, then they have knowledge, but they've lost the actual essence of the Vedas. So they think they know everything. So it's very common when you preach to somebody, yeah, I know. You know, they know everything. But usually the first thing I say to them, I say, have you read the Bhagavad Gita? Right? And quite often they'll say no. So then you can, you know, already you began to dismantle their pride. And then you can say to them, well, if you haven't read it, then why are you telling me all about it? Right? Just like one of our congregation, she lives in Canberra now, and she used to come to the loft for many years. I used to preach to her, and she went to Canberra, and I went to stay with her, went to visit her. And then I was preaching to her, and then she said to me, she said, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, and I've read the Bhagavad Gita. So I said to her, I said, where does Krishna say that? So half the things they say, Krishna has not even said. Just like one of the most famous sayings in ISKCON is Prabhupada said. Right? And then one time, you know, someone said, oh, Prabhupada said. So one of the devotees went to Prabhupada and they said, Prabhupada, someone said that you said. And Prabhupada said, Prabhupada said, Prabhupada said, where did Prabhupada say? You know, we quote the guru or we quote Krishna, but did they actually say it? And then the other defect is that people misquote. They say that, you know, Krishna says in chapter 3, or Krishna says in chapter 6, or Krishna says in chapter 12 or 14, right? But at the end of the Gita, then Krishna gives the final two shlokas, which overpower everything which is said previously. The first thing Krishna says is Sarva Daman Parichata. Sarva means everything. Sarva Daman Parichata, reject everything. Prabhupada even says in one lecture when he's speaking on that verse, Prabhupada said that Krishna has spoken about jnana, he has spoken about dhyana, he has spoken about tapasya, he has spoken about sannyas. Prabhupada says forget everything that was even spoken previously in the Bhagavad Gita. The main point is sarva dhamma parichaja, mam ekam sharanam vraja, surrender to me alone. That's Krishna's final instruction in the Gita. So everything in the Bhagavad Gita must work in relation or be under the authority of that shloka, of that verse. Right? If someone quotes something in the Bhagavad Gita but it's not to do with surrendering to Krishna, then what's the point of it? They're misquoting the Gita. like that. So then you have to point these kind of things out to them. You know, people, they either know the Bhagavad Gita a little bit or they don't know it at all, you just point it out to them. That's how you begin to preach to them. And then preaching means, the example is given, my spiritual master Tamal Krishnamurti said, that preaching means it is like feeding a baby breast milk. When you feed a baby, if you give the baby too much or too little, right, it will not be good for the baby. So preaching means like that. Whenever you preach to someone, then you have to see what is their position, like that. There's not, you can't just give a straight formula for preaching. Preaching means that you have to see, you have to analyze very quickly where the person is at. And when you understand where they're at, then you preach accordingly, like that. Just like feeding a baby, you have to be very sensitive to give the baby the right amount. So when you preach to someone, you shouldn't preach to them too much or too little. If you preach to them too much, they may go away. If you preach them too little, they may also go away. So you have to be very sensitive. Does that help, Tom? Thanks. Any other question or comment? It is described by the Acharyas that just like sometimes the king becomes intoxicated, and then when the king is intoxicated, he goes into the treasury and he takes out all the most precious jewels within the treasury, and he walks out onto the streets of the kingdom and he just starts giving them out to everyone. Right? He just starts saying, telling everyone, just take it. Everyone, just take it. Have some diamonds, have some emeralds, have some, just take it. Right? Just have all of these joy, and he's just there, and all of a sudden he's gone mad. So Lord Chaitanya is so intoxicated with the love of God, right? Gaudiya Nitya is so intoxicated, even though we have no qualification, but because they're experiencing so much ecstasy, so much bliss, then they're just giving it, take it, take it. Right? And someone may say, well, they're not qualified. But they say, it doesn't matter, just take it. Like that. So that is their meaning. Is that okay? You want to say anything else? Separation,
yeah.
The love of God. So separation is said to be the highest state of ecstasy. And it even surpasses union, because the intensity of the feeling is, it gives even more pleasure, because you feel more love at that time. Just like when you're separated from someone who you're very attached to, then In the separation, the emotions are stronger than when you actually come with them again. So that's why what they experience at that time is more intense. That's why Lord Chaitanya specifically tastes Vipralamba, or separation from Krishna, because the mood is more, the ecstasy which is experienced at that time is more intense. It's hard for us to understand, because you know we find it hard to even get up in the morning. You know, we're on such a, you know, a base level, or such a covered level of devotional service, it's very hard for us to even understand these things. But this is the explanation which is given by our Acharya science. So okay. Any other question or comment?
What time is the program today?
The program will begin at 11 o'clock in the theatre. All the devotees are welcome to attend. It's the disappearance day of Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj. So if you're able, then we, as on behalf of the disciples of Tamal Krishna Maharaj, we invite you to all please attend the program too.
As there are so many universal divinities from Mahavishnu, so if the Lord comes to in every boy, and the representatives of God like Sri Prabhupada are supposed to have in every boy to preach?
Yeah. So it is described that there is unlimited universes coming from the pores of Mahavishnu. So Prabhupada explains that as soon as Krishna leaves this universe, then he immediately appears within the next universe. And Prabhupada says, like a traveling circus, a roadshow, that they continuously go from one place to the next place to the next place. So Prabhupada even explains that the pastimes, just like when Krishna kills Putana, then as soon as he kills Putana in one universe, in the next universe, then that pastime is just beginning. And as soon as he kills her, then in the next universe, it just begins. So these pastimes are eternally happening in all the universe. So Krishna goes to all the universes, and Krishna sends his devotees to all the universes, like that, to assist him.
And is this like a time structure is going on, like past is going on in the universe, or the future is going on
in
the universe?
Krishna appears when he says he will appear. Just like in this universe, it says that he will appear at the, what is it, 72nd manu. How many manus in the day of Brahma?
14
in a day of Brahma. The seventh manu. In the 28th cycle of yugas, like that. So it says in every in the scriptures, it says that Krishna will appear at a particular point in that universe. So in the next universe, then he'll appear whenever it is predicted accordingly. Krishna can arrange all these things. It's hard for us to control time. We can't control time. Right there. But Krishna can control time because he's the master of time. It is his Shakti, Kala Shakti. So, it's okay. Okay. Any other question or comment? You can't please all the people all the time. Yeah, that our response is it's true. Is that what you want to know?
No, because I think that if you please the source of everything, Krishna, then everyone becomes pleased.
Yeah, not everyone becomes pleased. Just like we're all trying to please Krishna, but not everyone's happy with us. In the spiritual world, everyone's happy. But in the material world, some people aren't happy. But we don't mind. Because the material world is said to be a mental hospital. It's a mental asylum. So if some of the people are not happy that we're trying to cure ourselves, then that's their problem. It's not our problem. Like that. But the saying is that you cannot please all the people all the time. That's true. You can't. Is that okay? Yeah, Krishna left Vrindavan because he wanted to increase their attachment for him. So by being separated from him, their attachment became stronger. Increased their love. That's why he separated. If you read the commentary of Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur in the 10th canto, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, actually Krishna left Vrindavan and went to Mathura, but he only left for 2 months. Right? But it says in the Bhagavatam and so forth that he went to Mathura and he never returned, then he went to Dwarka. But Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur said he actually did return after 2 months. So if you read in the Acharya's commentaries, then you'll see it's explained that Krishna performs simultaneous activities, or he performs activities simultaneously. So even when the Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that when Krishna sent Uddhava back to Vrindavan, I think it's around about chapter 45, 46 of the 10th canto, when he sends Uddhava back to Vrindavan, then at that time when Uddhava first enters Vrindavan, he sees Vrindavan with Krishna present, because everyone's very happy, right? The cow, you can hear Krishna's flute playing, all the cows are very happy, everyone's walking around, there's happiness everywhere. Krishna was present, right? But then, when he arrives at Nanda Maharaja's palace, Anandagram, then he sees a different scene. He sees everyone is crying in separation. And he sees that The ovens where Mother Yashoda used to cook for Krishna is full of cobwebs. And she hasn't cooked for Krishna for years because Krishna has been separated from Vrindavan for years. So Krishna can show simultaneous, like, dimensions of... He can be with the devotees and simultaneously separated from the devotees. Almost like in different simultaneously existing dimensions. These things are very intricate and a little difficult to understand. You have to study the commentaries of the Acharyas very carefully like that. But Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that Krishna actually came back to Mathura, and then it also mentions that at a certain point he wound up his pastimes in Vrindavan and he took all the bridge buses back to Goloka after he comes and kills Dantavakra. That's also mentioned. So there's many details which are mentioned in the commentaries, but you have to study it closely. It'll become very... Bhanu Swami, because he translated all these things, he'll be here actually in a few weeks on Gaupaneet. If you ask him, he knows all these details perfectly because he studied, he translated all these translations. Any other question or comment? Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki.